evening, everybody. Welcome to tonight's program, the Malloy Show. Thank you. Oh, damn, it's going to be one of those nights. Well, the problem is we didn't get to do church night last night, and everything is just jammed up, you know what I'm saying? Welcome to the Malloy Show here on a Thursday. Did you have a happy 4th? Good. Ay, ay, ay. This first hour is being sponsored by a California truth seeker named Bill, whose message is, "This is in memory of my brilliant, beautiful wife, Candace, who left this earth 19 years ago, and who would have loved listening to the Malloy Show whenever she wasn't otherwise involved, drinking in life to its fullest, literally, and at a bit too furious a pace. I still miss her as much as ever. Keeping it lit, a California truth seeker." Thanks, Bill. Yeah, when, I guess when you meet Mr. or Ms. Wright, doesn't make any difference what happens. They remain that, right? Thanks, Bill. So did you have an interesting 4th? Fireworks and all? Yeah, we did. We went to Town Square in the town near us. It's great fun. Pow, bang, boom. Christina Gonzalez and Matthew Sway. They are a couple. They are Occupy activists in New York. They are Stop and Frisk fighters, YouTubers. And according to the New York Police Department, they are, quote, professional agitators. Worthy of a special advisory to the New York Police Department. New York Daily News reports that Gonzalez and Sway, who... Oh, this is sweet. Shared their first kiss on New Year's at Zuccotti Park. Aw. We're surprised to see a poster hanging from the podium at a precinct council meeting in Harlem recently. And there they are. They're pictures. Professional agitators. Not a wanted poster. The protesters say they believe they were singled out for posting YouTube videos of stop and frisks. Matthew Sway says, "What we do is not a crime," adding that the NYPD flyer looks more like a wanted poster than a police department advisory. Sway says, quote, "It's more insidious than a wanted poster because it's undefined. People can take their pick. Are we dangerous? Criminal? Insane?" Yeah, what these two do, they just move around the city and take videos of people being stopped and frisked by the NYPD. And the videos are posted to YouTube. And for doing that, and because they're Occupy, apparently, that's what the NYPD says they are now considered to be professional agitators. You know, when I was a kid, professional meant you got paid for something. Right? I wonder who's paying them. Oh, I know who it is. I know who's paying them. Oh, yeah. It's the Obama campaign, right? Of course it is. Something the NYPD should understand, and of course, I think all police departments should understand this, and they never will if they ever have. So forget about it. But here's a memo to the NYPD. Protesting injustice is not a crime. Well, it is now. So there you have it. A photo of these two hanging from the podium at a precinct in Harlem. Professional agitators. Be on the lookout. Car 54, be on the lookout. Man, oh man, oh man. A group of pastors in Alabama say they are not racist, even though they hung up a bunch of posters around a couple of small towns in Alabama. And it's an invitation that is limited to white Christians. It's a three-day conference, which began on the 4th. I think it ran yesterday, today, and tomorrow. It will include a cross-burning and be attended by Klan members. It's a group of pastors now preaching the love of Jesus Christus. Residents in Gwin, Alabama became outraged earlier this week after they noticed flyers posted around the town that read, Annual Pastors Conference, All White Christians Invited. The group of Christian Identity Ministries, that's who it is. It's a hate group. It's a real far-right, murderous, not yet, but they'll get to it. They'll get to it. Hate group. It's two groups, Christian Identity Ministries and the Church of God's Chosen. They told local television station that they just didn't have the facilities to accommodate non-whites. You know, we just can't do it. We don't have enough money to rent two Portal Johns, you know, one for white and one for colored. We just don't have enough money. We're, you know. The Christian Identity Ministries pastor, William J. Collier. Boy, you ought to see a picture of him. This is a toothless wonder, if ever there was one. He talks kind of funny, too. Yes, amen. We're seldom ever have been invited to black Muslim events, and we never been invited to NAACP events, and we never have been invited to join Jewish synagogues events and stuff. That's a quote. And what we're doing here has nothing whatsoever to do with any kind of racism or hate or anything like that. Nobody who would brand it as that would be a racist. Anybody who would brand it would be a racist and hater themselves, you know. Jesus, God. Yeah. Oh, white Christians only, pastors, and we're going to have a cross burning. He was asked about the cross burning, and he said, well... We call it a sacred Christian cross lighting ceremony. and it symbolizes our opposition to tyranny, you know, with the blah people and stuff, you know. We're not burning a cross. Look at the word. It says we're going to light a cross. If you light in your house, do you burn down your house? We often use fire. I'm dumber than hell. You know that? I'm from Alabama. Look here. Look at my mouth. You see that? What do you see? That's right. No teeth. Woo! We often use fire. Our ancient fathers had said fire was a cleansing element. Even the Bible says the earth would be purified with fire. What pure element can we use as a symbol of our worship? My God. The president of the NAACP's Birmingham Metro Chapter, Birmingham, Alabama, not England, could not recall any past cross burnings that had not been associated with racism or hate. Hezekiah Jackson said, quote, the only context that I'm familiar with is one that is not very positive and one that really symbolizes an era that many of us had hoped to put behind us. And that is this whole area of Jim Crow, this whole area of white supremacy, this whole area of discrimination, racial hatred. Blah, blah, blah. The annual Pastors Conference, All White Christians Invited event ends tomorrow. It is the fourth year that the Whites Only Conference has been held in Lamar County, Alabama. Amen. White preachers getting together, you know, the word of God is not for Jews, Arabs, Negroes, or midgets. It's only for us. A worker in Florida got an earful from, according to Raw Story, got an earful from Representative Bill Young, Republican of Florida, yesterday. There was like a political rally, and this, you know, this regular dude asked Republican Congressman Bill Young if he would support a bill that would raise the minimum wage to $10 an hour. In other words, raise it to what it was in about 1954, I guess, when you factor in inflation. The man tells this piece of crap, Bill Young, Republican of Florida, in a video, Jesse Jackson Jr. is passing a bill around to increase the minimum wage to $10 an hour. Do you support that? Young replies, probably not. The man says, $10? That would give us a living wage. Young says, why don't you just get a job? The man says, I do have one, $8.50 an hour. Young says, why do you want that benefit? Go get a job. The man says, I do have a job, but it's not enough to get by on. Young turns and walks away. Of course. I mean, these are filthy, pig-raping Republicans. This is what they do. This is what they say. Oh, by the way, about 18 months ago, Bill Young voted for a cost-of-living pay increase for himself and other members of Congress. He currently makes the default yearly congressional salary of $174,000 a year. This piece of crap, Bill Young. Republican of Florida. I have a job, $8.50. Oh, go get a job. I have one, sir. I just wonder if you would consider raising the minimum wage to $10. No! The day will come when people like Bill Young will have their head on a pike. Somewhere. You know it. I know it. Bill Young knows it. It's just a matter of time. Just a matter of time. Republican congressional candidate Chris Collins in New York knows that health care is expensive these days. He's a congressional candidate, Chris Collins. But according to Huffington Post, he argues it's for good reason. People are no longer dying from deadly forms of cancer. Did you know that? He told the Batavian, that's Batavia, New York, newspaper, in an interview, people now don't die from prostate cancer, breast cancer, and some of the other things. He was discussing his desire to repeal Obamacare. He said, the fact of the matter is our health care today is so much better. We're living so much longer because of innovations in drug development, surgical procedures, stents, implantable cardiac defibrillators, neural stimulators. They didn't exist 10 years ago. The increase in cost is not because doctors are making a lot more money. It's what you can get for health care, extending your life and curing diseases. People don't die from prostate cancer, breast cancer, and some other things, some of those other things anymore. An estimated 577,190 people in the United States will die from cancer this year, including 40,000 from breast cancer and 28,170 from prostate cancer. That's according to the American Cancer Society. This dumb son of a bitch. Here's another one. See, here's another one. And people will vote for this pig raper. People will vote for him. People will vote for him. Oh, by the way, this piece of human waste is challenging Representative Kathy Hochul. Remember her, a Democrat in New York? She's the one that voted with Republicans to hold Eric Holder in contempt over the gun thing. Eric Holder could be held in contempt for a lot of things, or gone after on a legal basis, but not that. So Kathy Hochul is up against this guy. People don't die of breast cancer and prostate cancer anymore. They just don't. So, you know, we don't need Obamacare. This is a Republican. This is how filthily stupid these people are. I mean, just it's hard to imagine how stupid and ignorant. And of course, the people who will vote for this man are even stupider and more ignorant.
Responsibility, they can't run and hide. Pissed us off, so we voted for Republicans, a form of suicide. Republicans suck!
Anger Management, back to Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour being sponsored by Bill, a California truth seeker. His message, this is in memory of my brilliant, beautiful wife, Candace, who left this earth 19 years ago, and who would have loved listening to the Malloy Show whenever she wasn't otherwise involved drinking in life to its fullest, literally. And at a bit too furious a pace. I still miss her as much as ever. Keeping it lit, the California truth seeker. Thanks, Bill. Thank you, Bill. Where is... Got a couple of complaints here. Yeah, here they are. The other night when I went off, started screaming and frothing at the mouth and knocking stuff over about the futility of signing petitions. A couple of emails. Mike, as I was listening to you talk about signing petitions, I was thinking about how the corporations are running so roughshod over us. And we are so helpless to defend ourselves. We can at least sign these petitions, as ineffective as they might be. So whatever you might say about the ineffectiveness of petitions, well, you can ditto that to everything we do. All I can say is remember what Gandhi said, quote, whatever you do will be insignificant, but it is very important that you do it, end quote. It's the action, not the fruit of the action, that's important, continuing the quote. You have to do the right thing. It may not be in your power, may not be in your time, and that there will be any fruit, but that doesn't mean you stop doing the right thing. You may never know what results come from your action, but if you do nothing, there will be no result. Glory lies in the attempt to reach one's goal and not in reaching it, end quote. Mel in San Antonio, Texas. And from Thomas, he writes, I've had to wonder what brought on your rant about online petitions. I was surprised at this because previously I found you to be informative and challenging. I think your presentation about online petitions was limited and poorly researched. And your request of others to provide proof of their effectiveness misplaces a responsibility that should be yours. Yes, you have the forum and the microphone. Yes, I have the radio and I control it in every way. Yes, if I hear any similar presentation by you, I'll add you to my do not listen list. Yes, we both have choices, so choose well. Okay, Thomas. I'm sorry, I just refuse to back down. I don't think signing an online petition is the same as what Gandhi was talking about. I'm sorry, I just don't. You know, call me crazy, but I just don't think it's the same thing. And on the second email, you know, one thing I just love are threats. Oh, that really gets me. Just convinces me to switch over to your way of thinking, pal. Yeah, threaten me. Choose wisely, Malloy. No, I understand the anger. That people who sign petitions may feel when I say they're useless. But again, I would issue the challenge, even though the second writer there tried to flip the challenge back to me. I don't have to prove a negative. You have to prove a positive. That's all. I say they are ineffective. It's nothing. You say they're effective. Prove it. Now, don't give me as an example. I was watching ABC News tonight about this this young girl. I think she's 13 or 14 years old, ballet student somewhere. I forget where. In Maine? I think it was in Maine. And she didn't like the way girls are depicted in one of the teenage girl magazines. And so she, you know, because they're all so airbrushed and deblemished and everything is made to look just perfect. And she and her girlfriends got together and decided that, you know, this is nonsense. Well, good for her for doing that. So she put together a video, put on YouTube or whatever, and then started a petition. If not a petition, a letter writing campaign, I guess that's a petition, asking this Teenage Girls magazine to get real in their showing of their models. Well, ABC treated the result of that effort as a victory. I think it was a miserable failure, not on the part of the kid who started this, bless her heart, but on the part of the magazine, because the magazine took a great big, made a big deal of it and said, okay, we're going to, and what they promised to do, at least one of the many and various and sundry teenage and younger models they use in their magazine, at least one of them will be a regular girl. And as far as the airbrushing, well, you know, they only do that when they have to remove a stray hair or cover up a freckle or a skin pimple, which was the whole point that the young lady was trying to get across to these predatory sons of bitches. If you want to sell us something, this young girl was saying, sell it to us on the basis, if you're going to use people, make them real people. Because we don't look like that. Now, they had her on television, just, you know, just a nice average girl. She was in ballet school or ballet class or whatever. And she said she wants to, I forget exactly what it was, something honorable that she wants to do with her life after she finishes being a professional ballet dancer. But here this kid had made an effort and gotten what she thought was the result. But because she's only, I don't know, how old was she? Yeah, 12, 13, 14, somewhere around there. The magazine publisher was able to snow her completely and just say, oh, yeah, okay, well, thank you. We get it. I'll tell you what, here's what we'll do. At least one of the girls we use as a model. Now, if you take a look, I know you can't. I can't either. And if any comes into our house when Molly becomes a teenager, I'll burn the goddamn thing. Of course, we're not going to raise her in a way that she'd ever take that garbage into the house. But if you look at one of those magazines, you'll see that every single depiction of a 12, 13, 14, 15-year-old girl is just so out of touch with reality. And as these girls were saying, they had this in the news in the clip, as these girls were saying, looking at these pictures in your magazine makes us feel inadequate. It makes us feel like we're not good enough. It makes us feel bad about the way we look. And these were kids that looked just fine. They're just normal kids. But this is what they do to American and I guess other kids, you know, around the world. This is what they do to them. If you don't look like this, you're a failure. And the only way you're going to look like this is to buy this garbage, crap, filth that we're selling you. So the story to me was just, it was a compounded tragedy. In the first place, that the magazine does that to teenage girls. And secondly, acting as though the teenage girls who put together this petition had succeeded, when in fact, they hadn't. They'd gotten the magazine's attention, and the magazine more or less gave them all the middle finger. So. Anyway, back to the criticism about what I said about online petitions. Prove it to me. Prove they work. Don't ask me to prove a negative. That's asinine to say that. Prove it doesn't work. I can't prove it doesn't work. I can state it doesn't work. And you prove it does. I'm waiting. Hey, ay, ay. And besides, the context that I was speaking was about petitions designed to effect political change. Those are about as useless as a used Kleenex. Sorry, but that's the truth. What else we got? Mike, first let me say I've enjoyed listening to your show for many years, and I agree with most of what you say. Really enjoyed being on your show for a couple of seconds this evening. You really should come to see Portland sometime. I know you and the family would love it. I was going to talk about institutional corruption as my second choice, but weather was the topic of the evening. On institutional corruption, it seems to be a sign of the times that all our institutions have been corrupted beyond the usual suspects. Religion, political parties. I myself quit the Democratic Party a couple of years ago. I joined the Progressive Party of Oregon. Then I quit that. It was a joke. So then I did something I never thought I'd do. I joined the Republican Party. I figured that if all political institutions were corrupt, I might as well join the master of corruption. Besides, I always vote Democrat straight party in the general election, no matter what. So at least in the primaries, I can have some fun voting for the least crummy, crazy choice. It was tough this last go around, or the most crazy. The reason I went Republican, and it wasn't easy, was so that I could talk to other Republicans. They would never listen to me when I was a Democrat. But now they at least listen. I always tell them that it's the banks and the CEOs that are bringing all this calamity upon us, which is the truth. I say the Democrats are weak. That's true. And it's not their fault. A half truth. They at least listen. See, Mike, most of these Republicans are idiots. You know that. And when a liberal or a progressive tries to talk to them, they just turn off their minds. There's no way to penetrate that. Not for you, at least. But when you say you're Republican, they at least listen. I grew up in the 60s during Gemini and Apollo and all that, remember? Science was everything then. People believed in science in those days. We all have to get back to that as soon as possible if we have a chance to save the planet. Never mind, we agree on everything in that plan also. These idiots now deny science. I hate that so much. Anyway, it was really nice talking to you. Say hi to Kathy, Dave in Portland. Hi, Kathy.
Just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by a California truth seeker named Bill. Thanks, Bill. His message, this is in memory of my brilliant, beautiful wife, Candace, who left this earth 19 years ago and who would have loved listening to the Malloy Show whenever she wasn't otherwise involved drinking in life to its fullest, literally, and at a bit too furious a pace. I still miss her as much as ever. Keeping it lit, a California truth seeker. Thanks, Bill. Thanks for the sponsorship. Regarding the man from Florida who asked Congressman Bill Nelson, was it Bill Nelson? No, it wasn't Bill Nelson. It was the other Bill. About raising the minimum wage to $10 an hour in the Congress. The Republican just walked away from him. I get this from Roy in Fort Pierce. Mike, just thought I'd share an example of the Florida employer's mindset. A guy called me today about painting the inside and outside of the foreclosure he bought. Right there and then, I should have just said, not interested. But work's been slow, and I thought, well, maybe he was buying it for his family. So I drive 45 minutes to go look at it. It's a 2,500 square foot, like an acid trip with mold all over the walls. The smell was gross from the outside. This guy wants white ceilings, tan walls, and white doors and baseboard, etc. He then tells me he'll pay me $12 an hour, and he expects two of us to do it all in 3 days max, inside and out. I'm shocked, and then I tell him, are you out of your mind? Two journeyman painters couldn't do this in 5 days. And I was making $15 an hour 20 years ago in California. Well, this isn't California, he says. It's right to work state. What is it about Florida, the land of charlatans and con men? And that's just the politicians. He then told me he'd bought it for $35,000 at a foreclosure auction. And we'll put maybe $3,000 into it and then flip it for $120,000 in a couple of weeks. Well, good luck to him, but not on the sweat of my labor. I've got to get out of this place and to go back west where at least they pay a living wage. Roy in Fort Pierce. That's true about Florida. I have family that lives in Florida, but that is the most filthy, con artist filled, degenerate state in the union. And don't tell me your state's worse. I lived in Florida a couple of times back in the days when I was insane. And while I do enjoy the North Florida beaches, I would no more live in Florida. I will open a vein first. I'll move into a cardboard box down in Central City Park in Atlanta before I'd ever do this, you know, move to Florida. I mean, every single filthy weasel of a hustler, liar, cheat, sneak, I don't care if it's a car business, insurance business, any kind of telemarketing, these swine who buy houses and, you know, stick a couple grand in when they know the place is going to just fall apart, and then try to and succeed in conning these poor, miserable losers who come from all over the country and they go to Florida. Both times I went to Florida, I consider myself to be a loser. In retrospect, you don't consider yourself a loser at the time, not unless you're, you know, completely schizophrenic. But in retrospect, you know, it's easy to see, Malloy, you were really a loser. Both times you went to Florida, well, I was also perfect for the predators. You know, like a huge chunk of bleeding meat tossed into a shark tank. And, you know, if you read, who's your guy who writes for the Miami Herald, wrote all those books? Carl Hiaasen. Read his books and you'll find out, although he, you know, it's very humorous stuff, but the characters he writes about, are real. He turns it into a joke. But the way they slice and dice people who can never defend themselves, who don't know, you know, which way is up. So many of the people that go to Florida are refugees anyway. I'm not talking about the retirees, but I'm talking about people who are, you know, working age, young families who have just been brutalized by this capitalist economic system. And they figure, well, I'll go to Florida a little cheaper there. I can rent a house and pick oranges off the trees in the backyard, which is essentially true. But God help you if you turn to any kind. I'm overstating this, of course, because there are exceptions. But the feeling is, God help you if you turn to any small business down there. I don't care what it is. Amco, car repair, franchise operations, it doesn't make any difference. They will cut your throat and laugh while you're bleeding. Every one of them. So, I certainly get what the substance of that email. Thanks for writing. Terrible place. This is from Bloody Bum. Really? Right. Spike, hate to break it to you, pal, but the Democrats are no more interested in single-payer health insurance now than they were 3 years ago. It's game, set, match. Fascism is the new order. And what he's quoting here is from FireDogLake.com. Dateline Washington, Representative Raul Grijalva, Democrat of Arizona, said Thursday, you know, he's part of the Progressive Caucus, if not the leader. He said Thursday that the Supreme Court's decision to uphold the constitutionality of Obama's health care law means that progressive lawmakers won't be pushing for a single-payer option anymore, although the concept will live on in their minds. And Huffington Post has it this way. The idea of a single-payer option, such as Medicare for All approach to health care, will continue to be, quote, a fundamental political point that we all support, said Grijalva. He's co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. He went on, quote, but the reality of what just happened today, the constitutionality, probably puts the emphasis on making the law work as opposed to trying to get a new plan, end quote. And as Huffington Post puts it, in the days leading up to the Supreme Court vote, House progressives were starting to get giddy about the idea of putting a single-payer option back on the table. They even had a bill ready to go in the event that the court struck down some or all the health care law. But that's not going to happen. So, you know, once again, and this just, it belabors the point, but it makes the point that I try to make on this program, that organized Democrats, even the ones who identify themselves as a progressive caucus or what have you, they are not. I'm not saying they're evil people. I'm saying they're cowards. They are political cowards. They will not do this. So if you're looking for single payer, forget it. July. This hour is sponsored by Andrea Friedel. And Andrea writes, in an effort to simplify my life, reduce stress, as well as to raise a bit of cash, I have sold my laser engraver and every other piece of equipment I really don't need. So I'm sharing some of the proceeds with you, as well as our head-on radio network friend. The last of the laser-engraved items are for sale at my Etsy shop, E-T-S-Y, Etsy.com, E-T-S-Y.com. I will be focusing on my art, paintings, and making little gift albums for customers. In fact, I will be sending one to you very soon. Blogging at Paint, Paste, and Post. .blogspot.com. My YouTube channel is Friedel Art, F-R-I-E-D-E-L-L, Art. And Friedel Art is also on eBay for at least the next month while I clear out the studio. And Mike, you don't have to read all this. Well, thank you, Andrea. All right. Check out her website. Okay? Her stuff is for sale at Etsy.com, E-T-S-Y, Etsy.com. Or you can go to her her blog spot, paint, paste, and post.blogspot.com. Thank you, Andrea. Interesting email. Thank you very much. What else we got here? From Max, Mike, I sent a lot of online petitions, and there seems to be some value to online petitions with environmental and human rights concerns internationally and holding some corporations accountable nationally. I agree that national politics don't care, but I often get updates for environmental victories where I often get updates on environmental victories where petitions and judicial activism have borne fruit. I know online petitions are laborious, but they do seem to be worth the effort in getting acceptable produce and grocery store change and things like that. Foreign governments can be compelled to ban imports or free dissidents with petitions. I don't tally the successes, but petitioners are informed when there have been victories, allotting more wilderness for endangered species. I gave up on all my online activism after the 2010 midterms, but have been drawn back in by successes with animal welfare actions and the simple spirit to do or say something, if only as a testament that some people did care in early 21st century society. And it's signed, Max. I can agree with a lot of what you've said here, but I think the salient point of what I was trying to, the salient point that I was trying to make, is the one that says Max writes, I agree that national politics don't care, or national politicians don't care. And I think that's my point, to sign online petitions to try to get some Democrat in Congress or some Republican in Congress to change his or her position is ludicrous. If we got a million signatures in the first place, the district probably that the member of Congress represents probably, or the member of the House represents, is probably not, doesn't contain that many residents. Some of them might. But members of Congress don't respond to you and me. They respond to the people who provide the money to put them in office. I mean, that's just like night following day. I mean, that just happens. And that's neither good nor bad. It just is. The people who provide the grease to get these people into office are the ones to whom they respond. I mean, that's not, there's no conspiracy there. There's no, like I say, there's no good or bad. That just is. I mean, we can see it as bad, but it just is. Now, if we had public financing of elections and banned all corporate donations totally and insisted that the largest donation allowed would be $100 per individual, then the politicians would respond to petitions. But they don't, because there's no connection. There's no connection between your vote and what the person you voted for does. There's zero connection. Because your vote really doesn't mean anything. And it's not your vote that he's after anywhere, or she's after. It's the money to hold on, especially in the House, to hold on to a House seat. There's no, I mean, come on. This is not deep, complicated stuff. I mean, Molly Ivan said a long time ago, you dance with them that brung you. And you and I don't brung anybody to Congress. We just don't anymore. It's gone, especially now with the Citizens United decision by the fascist Supreme Court. So forget about it. Or don't forget about it. I don't care. Now, as far as what Max is saying here about environmental issues, or if you petition a grocery store chain, okay, I will certainly stand corrected on that. And some environmental issues, yes. So once again, you know, I opened my mouth and inserted my foot just a little bit too far. So Max is right, and the other two writers were right. If you break it down, take it away from politics, if you don't believe everything's political, take it away from politics, put it into the realm of environmental issues or grocery store chains or, you know, sustainable shade-grown coffee stuff, coffee beans that are sold inside a store someplace. Okay. And all that's good. So I will declare myself 80% right, because or 70, okay, 70, all right, 60%. Because the only thing that really concerns me at this point is whether or not politicians respond to the people that ostensibly, theoretically, they're supposed to represent, and they don't. They do not. Now, if the desires of the constituents dovetail with what the corporatists or the capitalists want, it looks as though, you know, when the rooster crows, it appears that the rooster crowing is bringing the sun up. But it's not. So the intersection of what corporate America wants and what I, as a voter for candidate X, wants, when that occurs, I can sit back and say, ha-ha! We did it! No, we didn't. It just depends on what the corporation or the capitalist or the money person who provided 50,000, 100,000, a million to get person X elected. It depends on what they want, what they demand. So, okay, you're right, Max, insofar as anything other than political petitions. I hadn't completely thought it through, I guess. Here's something else. This is from Lee in New York City. Mike, from an email that I got from the Progressive Change Campaign Committee. Quote, have you ever heard of a congressman reading about an online petition in his local newspaper and signing up for the cause? Well, that happened with Representative Gary Peters, Democrat of Michigan. And our petition demanding Michigan Republicans apologize for silencing women legislators. Thanks for being among the 48,000 people who signed the petition. Together, we earned national and local media attention that led Representative Peters to sign. The Associated Press reported on our work last week, quote, the Progressive Change Campaign Committee has collected more than 48,000 online signatures calling on Michigan Speaker J.C. Bolger and Majority Floor Leader Jim Stamos, both Republicans, to apologize to Representative Lisa Brown for denying her the right to speak. Okay, well, I guess an online petition demanding an apology. All right, that works. But try an online petition to get single-payer health care. Dave in Albuquerque mailed in yesterday regarding what we've been talking about, the destruction of the global climate system, destruction as far as people and plants and animals are concerned. And Dave writes, Mike, we are overpopulating our planet. What we can do is educate our children, ignore the liars, buy high-mileage cars, efficient furnaces, install photovoltaics or wind power devices, turn off lights, keep travel to a minimum, and encourage your neighbors to elect leaders who understand the problem. Maybe some scientists in our future will save humanity by finding out a way to sequester carbon. Dave in Albuquerque. Yeah, it is a race, isn't it, Dave? It is a race going on. I guess we shouldn't talk about the weather again. Another record set here yesterday. Well, in the Atlanta area. I heard something that 2,000 heat records were broken so far, and in July, and we're now on the fifth day. 2,000 national records of heat records. I also saw an interesting statistic in normal, quote-quote, weather. For every record broken on the upward end of the scale, you know, breaks the high temperature, you usually have one on the low end of the scale that breaks the low temperature, you know, the lowest recording. That has been pretty much, according to what I saw, a standard expectation of the ratio between high temperature record breaking and low temperature record breaking, 1 to 1. But this report said so far this year it's running 1 to 10, or 10 to 1. 10 heat records broken for every 1 cold record broken. Kind of skewed, isn't it? From the New York Daily News, they're reporting that Mitt Romney's massive fortune, estimated to be as high as $250 million, is held in a complex and opaque network of offshore havens that are impossible to penetrate. That's according to a report in Vanity Fair, as reported by the New York Daily News. Romney had a Swiss bank account and has interest in tax havens like Bermuda and the Cayman Islands. The Romney campaign has insisted he does not use the havens to avoid paying U.S. taxes. Jesus Christ. And he can stand there and say that and be the bobbleheads and go, yeah, that's right, that's right. He said he did, that's right. But Vanity Fair wrote that it is impossible to confirm that he is not seeing a savings. Huh? I don't get that. Anyway, Romney paid a 14% tax rate on $21 million in income in 2010. Vanity Fair noted that Romney has continued to receive large payments from Bain Capital since leaving the private equity firm in 1999. What? I mean, that's the way capitalism works. You know, when you are one of the grease monkeys of capitalism, like Romney is, I mean, $250 million, ho hum. You know, that's just that's a working millionaire's expectation. How much you worth? Oh, $250 million. Oh well, I don't know. $250 million. Not bad, not good. A little this, a little that. I don't know. Right? Romney is obviously in the one half of 1%, but he's not in the 1/10 of 1% where the real decisions are made. Romney is just a butt boy. He does what he's told. He's a cabana boy. Is that the right term? He takes care of the cabana. He does what he's told. He lies on cue. It doesn't make any difference what it is. He will lie about it. It matters not. He's determined. You know, I'm sure Romney sits back and says, well, if Barack Obama can become the first black president, I can become the first Mormon president. Huh? But Romney, you know, Romney's little circle of lies is starting to close in on him. Have you noticed that? His little circle of deceptions and lies and I misspoke. No, my campaign manager misspoke. No, it's a tax. No, it's not a tax. It's a penalty. No, it's not a penalty. It's a jar of applesauce. No, it's not that. It's a dog. No, it's a, Romney is slowly drawing the noose around his own neck. And what is really funny is to see how the Wall Street Journal editorial page, where, you know, the people write those editorials don't publish. I mean, they don't wipe after going to the bathroom until Rupert Murdoch has given them permission. So, you know, damn good and well, those things don't get published without Rupert Murdoch personally signing off. And the Wall Street Journal is just gutting him because Rupert doesn't like Mitt. Rupert and Mitt. Jesus Christ, where am I? I'm in Munchkinville. Rupert doesn't like Mitt. Mitt hates Rupert. We'll be right back. Play the music, please.
angry, let Mike do it for you. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. I don't know why I'm focusing on this, but I am here for a second about Romney's hidden fortune. And again, $250 million, while, it, you know, it's that used to be all the money in the world. Now it's just, will barely get you into the Platinum Lounge at Delta Airlines when you're waiting for your flight. But Romney, according to Vanity Fair, Romney has Romney has personal interest in at least a dozen of the 138 or more funds organized by Bain Capital in the Cayman Islands. 138 of them? God damn, Cayman Islands, man. That's a real hotbed for capitalist activity, isn't it? P.O. Box what? P.O. Box Bain. Cayman Islands. Oh, my God. Vanity Fair said that Romney-related funds are worth as much as $30 million and hidden behind confidentiality disclaimers. I wish I could get a confidentiality disclaimer, you know, so that when it's time to file my income taxes every year, I could just write down something like, none of your goddamn business. I've got a confidentiality agreement. It's an agreement between Kathy and me, and we've agreed to tell the Internal Revenue Service it's none of your business what we make. I mean, that's essentially what Romney does. Now, I don't, you know, of course I wouldn't do that because I believe in paying taxes. I believe in absolutely in paying taxes. But then I'm just a working class person. You know, I'm not in the Romney realm or even, forget Romney. Jesus God, one of the reasons I keep working is because I have to. Speaking of that, Romney not paying taxes, and so many of the top 0.1% in this country, they look at you and me who pay taxes as a bunch of chumps. Before I get to that, let me remind you one more time, this hour is sponsored by Andrea Friedel. And her message says, in an effort to simplify my life, reduce stress, as well as to raise a bit of cash, I've sold my laser engraver and every other piece of equipment I don't really need. So I'm sharing some of the proceeds with you, Mike, as well as our friends at Head On Radio Network. The last of the laser engraved items are for sale at my Etsy shop. That's Etsy.com, E-T-S-Y, Etsy.com. I will be focusing on my art, paintings, and making little gift albums for customers. Blogging at paintpasteandpost.blogspot.com. My YouTube channel is Friedel Art, and Friedel Art is also on eBay for at least the next month while I clear out the studio. And Mike, you don't have to read all this. Well, thank you, Andrea. I appreciate the sponsorship, and I hope everything goes well at your sale. I really do. Good luck on that. Check her out, okay? Etsy, ETSY.com, or paintpasteandpost.blogspot.com. Knowing that the market's success in this country is to screw your neighbor as furiously as you can. Now, not literally. Ten Commandment against that. But I mean, cheat, lie, sneak, steal. You know, if the roads buckle and the bridges collapse and the schools are molding, it's not my business. I'm okay. I'd send my kid to a private school and I have a helicopter. You know, I mean, it's that kind of attitude. Guess what's happening in France? Did you see this in the Times today? France's new socialist government announced today. This is online, and it's from yesterday, I believe. France's new socialist government announced on Wednesday billions of euros in tax increases and new taxes to be borne by businesses and the wealthy. In a revision of the 2012 budget designed to meet promised deficit targets in a period of nearly stagnant growth. Now, watch what happens in France. They're going to do fine. But the filth in our country that run our political system you know, tell you that no, we got to have no taxes, no corporate taxes, no taxes on the wealthy. It all trickle down. It's just like urine. If you're standing, at the foot of a cliff and somebody way up on the cliff, 300 feet up, starts to pee, it'll trickle down on you. That's what you have to wait for. Well, the French government needs to make up a gap, it says here, of 6 to 10 billion euros, or about $7.5 to $12.5 billion this year to bring the budget deficit down to 4.5% of gross domestic product. To meet a 3% target in 2013, an additional $41 billion in tax revenue dollars and spending cuts will have to be found. So, for this year alone, the government announced about $9 billion in higher taxes, with about $7.6 billion more to come next year. A freeze on government spending is expected to save $1.8 billion. The finance minister, Pierre Moscovici, said, quote, "We face an extremely difficult financial and economic situation. The wealthiest households, the big companies, will be asked to contribute. In 2012 and 2013, the effort will be particularly big." So what they're going to do here, among the main new taxes, is a special surcharge on the assets of individuals with more than $1.6 million of global wealth. Now, that's expected to bring in $2.87 billion in taxes. The tax is expected to be made permanent next year, when there will also be a new tax bracket of 75% on incomes of more than $1.25 million a year. You go, French! I mean, this is the only way to do it. If you're really crazy enough to believe that austerity and paying away, of course, the French are on the euro, so they don't have any chance. They don't have any choice. What they ought to do is just say, out of hell with this great experiment, but we're out of here. You know, the euro only would have worked if they also would have had a political unity, not just a monetary unity, but a political unity. There's no more France. It's all part of the United States of Europe, like we do. Anyway, the French government also said 73% of the tax increases on families would fall on those with the most wealth. Individuals are expected to pay 53% of France's taxes next year. That'll come from individuals. Now, there'll also be a one-time tax on oil stocks, which will hit refineries and gasoline stations. The theory behind that is they've all made a fortune on higher oil prices. About $1.1 billion is to come from ending a tax exemption for overtime income. There will be a new tax on dividends and stock options. What else here? I mean, it just goes on and on. You can find this online at nytimes.com. So the French, can we still call them France, or do we have to call them freedom? Remember the French fries and the freedom fries? Remember the first grader attitude of the Republicans in Congress back when the French said, not sure about this Iraq thing. Remember? And they tried to have French fries stricken from the menu. I think they succeeded, the Republicans, in the White House dining hall. Not White House, in the Congressional dining hall. They called them freedom fries. Remember that? Wasn't that just such a mark of maturity? Well, you remember? So here the French are saying, okay, if we're going to play the game seriously about reducing the deficit and satisfying the bankers who are blood-sucking every single thing out of the global economy they can, their heads are going to wind up on pikes, too, eventually. They will. You know it. I know it. They know it. So in order to do that, okay, if that's what we're going to do, we're going to do it. So we're going to levy taxes on the wealthy. We are going to levy taxes on the wealthy to a degree that they're going to wish they weren't wealthy. Or maybe not. I mean, if the effective marginal top tax rate is going to be 73% on people who make over, what was it, $1.6 or $1.7 million a year, aw, poor babies, what are you going to do, have to sell one or two of your vineyards? No more trips to Miami Beach? Huh? French love to go to Miami Beach, I understand. So there you have it. One way to handle a fiscal crisis. Now, of course, in this country, can you imagine if the Obama administration proposed Of course, the president proposes, Congress disposes, so it would be an exercise in futility, and Obama would never do it because he understands it's an exercise in futility. And it would just be used to show him as the communist Kenyan that he really is, who supports the Mau Mau and wants white people to be his slaves. And we got to keep that hidden, or they got to keep that hidden. I mean, I couldn't care less. But the Obama administration has to keep hidden the fact that they're really Kenyans who are Muslims and want to Mau Mau the white people into whatever the hell the latest tea bag dumbassery happens to be. But can you imagine an administration in this country saying, okay, rich people, you've had a free ride for 40 years. The free ride is over. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to get back around the top marginal tax rate when Kennedy was president, and he lowered them. So here you go. Hold on to your ass, because this is the way it's going to be. The top marginal tax rate on you millionaires and billionaires is going to be 75% or 70%. Well, you know, whatever. We can negotiate. You imagine that happening in this society, in this country? Are you kidding?
Free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
Yes, it is. 10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Andrea Friedel. And her message is, in an effort to simplify my life, reduce stress, as well as to raise a bit of cash, I've sold my laser engraver and every other piece of equipment I don't really need anymore. So I'm sharing some of the proceeds with you, as well as our friend at HatOnRadioNetwork.com. The last of the laser-engraved items are for sale at my Etsy shop, ETSY.com. I will be focusing on my art, paintings, and making little gift albums for customers. I am blogging at paintpasteandpost.blogspot.com. My YouTube channel is Friedel Art, F-R-I-E-D-E-L-L, Friedel Art. And that's also on eBay for at least the next month while I clear out the studio. And Mike, you don't have to read all this. Thank you, Andrea, very much for the sponsorship. And best with the sales. Laser engraver. I like to have one of those and use it on Boner. Laser engrave across one of his ass cheeks. I am a dork. Wouldn't that be fun? So anyway, the French are, as I mentioned, the French are lowering the boom on the people who upon whom the boom should be lowered. Meanwhile, here in La La Land, we have Mitt Romney, who wants to be president with his $250 million hidden asset. Everything is hidden. It's none of your business. It's nobody's business. What is our business is what happens between a woman and her physician. But Mitt Romney's money is none of your business. What is our business is what goes inside a woman's vagina and who put it there and how long it's in there and who's pushing the buttons to make it do whatever it's supposed to do. That is our business. But Mitt Romney's assets are none of our business. You get that? You do get that, right? Of course you do. According to the Times, or the New York Daily News, I'm sorry, and according to New York Daily News and Vanity Fair, Romney's financial disclosure form lists 25 different investments in funds that are dodgy at best in an open-ended category labeled over $1 million. 25 of those, Vanity Fair reported, many of them are set up in tax havens like the Cayman Islands, of course. But they're not tax havens! They just appear to be because they are. But they're not because Mitt says they're not. These are not tax havens. What are they? Places. They're places, but these are tax havens. Everybody knows Cayman Islands. These are tax havens. But mine aren't. How are yours different? They're different because they're mine. I see. So you're telling the truth, and the appearances are what seems to be turning all this into your lying. Of course I'm telling the truth. I'm Mitt Romney. But doesn't your religion believe that you can lie for God? You can say anything you want if it is to further what you consider to be the righteous goals of your personal belief or your religion, and you'll be forgiven? Why do you keep bringing religion into this? Yeah, kiss my ass, okay? Meanwhile, it says here, the Romney campaign is distancing itself from the CEO of Barclays, who stepped down from the British bank Tuesday amid an interest rate fixing scandal. Robert Diamond will no longer co-host a London fundraiser scheduled for July 27th, when the Romneys will be in town for the Olympics. We'll be in town for the Olympics, don't you know? Really? Yes, we shall. We're going to get together with Robert Diamond for a fundraiser, but oh goddamn, he got caught. He got caught. So, Robert Diamond will no longer co-host a London fundraiser when the Romneys will be in town for the Olympics. A Romney spokeswoman, Andrea Saul, told the Financial Times, quote, Mr. Diamond decided to step aside as a co-host for the upcoming London reception to focus all his attention on Barclays. There's still a lot in there that he has to steal. I just added that part. We respect his decision, the spokeswoman said. The fundraiser will go on without Robert Diamond. Barclays was fined $500 million last week by U.S. and British regulators for submitting false reports on interbank borrowing rates between 2005 and 2009. Oh, a slap on your wrist! And now Robert Diamond is going to resign. Oh, a double slap on your wrist! With two fingers. Pap, pap. Don't you hate these people? Ah, I mean, don't they just turn your stomach? Maybe hate's the wrong word. Don't they make you sick? The cheating, the lying, the stealing, the deception, it's just endlessly. Of course, Mr. didn't know anything about this guy, Robert Diamond, that he was a liar and a thug and a thief, even though this has been going on, you know, for the better part of a decade. But the Mr. didn't know anything about it. No, we're just going to be in town. We're going to be in town for the Olympics. So we thought, well, what the hell? Let's have a fundraiser. We can use British money, can't we? Will the Supreme Court say anything about that? So the Romneys will be in town. New York is referred to as the city. I guess London is referred to as town. In town. We'll be in town. Our horse, or a couple of our horses, are going to be in the Olympics, don't you know? Oh, the horses the American taxpayer have been paying to keep up or upkeep, depending on how you want to look at it, with our tax breaks. I love America. I love capitalism. My name is Mitt Romney, and I approve this ad. Roy Show. Ah, to hell with Mitt Romney and his wealth, right? Nobody cares. It doesn't matter. This hour is being sponsored by Roy Runnings. His message, Joe Walsh, only in America can a coward insult an American hero, not pay child support, and have a very realistic chance of getting reelected as a Republican louse in the House of Representatives. Got to love middle American Christians and their values. Thanks, Roy. You speak the truth. You want to hear some more truth? This was an ad in the LA Times. Cynthia sent this to me. And it is, it's an open letter kind of thing to, and it's done kind of cartoonish, like on a piece of notebook paper. Open letter to liberal and nominal Catholics. It's your moment of truth. And then the body of the ad says this. Will it be reproductive freedom or back to the dark ages? Do you choose women and their rights or bishops and their wrongs? Over 40 Roman Catholic institutions are suing the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services to halt the contraceptive insurance mandate, endangering the rights of all female employees. In light of the U.S. Catholic Conference of Bishops and their war against women's right, a woman's right to contraception, the following. Why are you aiding and abetting a church that has repeatedly engaged in a crusade to ban contraception, abortion, and sterilization, to deny the right of all women everywhere, Catholic or not, to decide whether and when to become mothers? Think of the acute misery, poverty, needless suffering, unwanted pregnancies, overpopulation, social evils, and deaths that can be laid directly at the door of your church's pernicious doctrine that birth control is a sin and must be outlawed. If you think you can change the church from within, get it to lighten up on birth control, gay rights, marriage equality, embryonic stem cell research, you're deluding yourself. By remaining a so-called good Catholic, you are doing bad to women's rights. You are an enabler. And it's got to stop. It's a disgrace that U.S. health care reform is being held hostage to your church's irrational opposition to medically prescribed contraception. No political candidate should have to genuflect before the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. President Obama has compromised, but the church never budges. Instead, it is launching a ruthless political inquisition in your name. The louder your church hysterically claims offense against religious liberty, the harder it works to take away women's liberty. Your church has introduced into Congress a bill to allow dogma to trump the civil rights and private consciences of employees. Cardinal Timothy Dolan, president of the U.S. Catholic Conference, orchestrated a dozen federal lawsuits filed by 43 Catholic institutions attacking the contraceptive mandate. The church that hasn't persuaded you to shun contraception now wants to use the force of secular law to deny birth control to non-Catholics. You're better than your church. So why stay? Why put up with an institution that discriminates against half of humanity? Why send your children to parochial schools to be indoctrinated into the next generation of obedient donors and voters? Can't you see how misplaced your loyalty is after two decades of sex scandals involving praying priests, church complicity, collusion, and cover-up going all the way to the top? Join those of us who put humanity above dogma. As Thomas Paine observed, quote, my own mind is my own church, end quote. We invite you to free yourself from incense-fogged ritual. from ideas uttered long ago by ignorant men, from blind obedience to an illusory religious authority. Life begins at excommunication. As the member of the flock, so-called, of an avowedly anti-democratic old boys club, isn't it time you vote with your feet? Please, exit en masse. Signed, the co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Yeah, of course. So the the ad ran yesterday in the LA Times. It's a good ad. The Freedom From Religion Foundation has also placed about 1,000 30-second TV spots promoting state and church separation. Recorded by former Catholic Julia Sweeney, actress and playwright of Letting Go of God. These Catholic bishops are just determined that they are going to dictate to you. It doesn't make any difference who you are. You can be atheist, agnostic, Jewish, Muslim, Catholic, Protestant, Hindu, whirling dervish. It doesn't make any difference. If you have employee-provided health insurance, these Catholic rapists, these Catholic child molesters, are going to do everything in their power to use the force of this sick, twisted religion to force you not to have available, I realize that's a screwed up sentence, birth control. That your insurance will not be allowed to provide you a birth control option. Wow. I mean, it's one thing to get into a political scrum about Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, depending if you're a Democrat or Republican, that's how you refer to it. You know, okay, fine. But for this religion to inject itself, you know, it's so simple. If the Catholics don't want to use birth control, even though 98% of Catholic women do, don't. Don't try to force it on the rest of humanity, you sons of bitches, you bishops who, I mean, when you're not doing this, what are you doing? Covering up for the priests that anally rape children? Of course that's what you do. How many centuries have you been doing that? So if you don't want your flock, and that's a good way to describe members of a Catholic church or a Christian church or a Protestant church for that matter, flock, as in sheep. Bah, bah. If you don't want your flock to get all flocked up using birth control pills, well, then tell them. Tell them they'll burn in hell if down there with Andy and the rest of these freaks. Tell them. But why inject yourself into a political system that doesn't want anything to do with you? Bastards.
He's the voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour, Bloomberg Businessweek is reporting the following, quote, the Fukushima nuclear disaster was the result of man-made failures before and after last year's earthquake, according to a report from an independent parliamentary investigation. And according to the Institute for Public Accuracy, some comments on that. Arnie Gunderson is a former nuclear industry insider and now an independent consultant, chief engineer with Fairwinds Consulting. He said today, quote, I'm not surprised by the Diet Committee, that's the Japanese parliament, I'm not surprised by the Diet Committee's conclusion and have been saying the same thing for almost a year. I've always felt uncomfortable calling it an accident. It's a man-made disaster, a catastrophe. This report confirms that. I applaud the Diet for being so forthright. I met with them while in Japan, and they seemed to genuinely want to get to the bottom of things. However, beyond the shores of Japan, some people will try to misuse this report to say it can't happen here. The fact is, it can. Here in the United States, the nuclear industry basically forced out Gregory Jaczko as chair of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. And, of course, the International Atomic Energy Agency was in Japan. It's a worldwide problem. The nuclear industry has taken control of the regulators. Carl Grossman, professor of journalism, State University of New York. He's the author of Cover Up, What You Are Not Supposed to Know About Nuclear Power. He said today, quote, the Fukushima Daiichi catastrophe was a man-made disaster directly attributable to, quote, collusion between the government, the regulators, and TEPCO, and the lack of government by said governance by said parties. That is the conclusion of the 10-member Fukushima Nuclear Accident Independent Investigation Commission of the National Diet of Japan. Grossman says, quote, this sort of collusion between supposed nuclear regulators and those they are supposed to regulate is a worldwide pattern. The nuclear foxes aren't guarding the nuclear henhouse. Regulation is a myth. That's been the situation in Japan, the United States, indeed in nations all over the globe. The IAEA set up to both promote and somehow regulate nuclear power at the same time represents this atomic dysfunction internationally. Man-made disaster. Now, we know the situation in this country. We know about the aging nuclear plants. We know that there are thousands of tons of spent nuclear fuel rods just sitting, what did I read today, at 60 or 65 different nuclear energy production sites around the United States. Tons and tons and tons of this stuff. Yucca Mountain, forget that. Now, on top of that, from the Australian Broadcast Corporation, ABC, only it's not American, it's Australian, a further report on the Japanese parliamentary report into the Fukushima meltdowns and the conclusion that this horror was a preventable man-made disaster. The investigation, can you imagine having an investigation like this in the United States? The investigation report says the meltdowns were foreseeable. And in saying that, they were, of course, slamming plant operator TEPCO and nuclear regulators for ignoring warnings of big earthquakes and tsunamis. It also blames collusion between the government, regulators, and nuclear companies for betraying Japan's right to be safe Good God. Can you imagine leveling that charge at the United States nuclear industry? As truthful as it is, can you imagine? Of course you cannot, nor can I. The report said, quote, they effectively betrayed the nation's right to be safe from nuclear accidents. Therefore, we conclude that the accident was clearly man-made. We believe that the root causes were the organizational and regulatory systems that supported faulty rationales for decisions and actions rather than issues relating to the competency of any specific individual, end quote. This is exactly what is going on in this country, is it not? The agencies designed to regulate these horrifically toxic industries have become nothing more than hand puppets of the industries themselves. Now, call me up and tell me what a great believer you are in capitalism. Huh? Yes, it's wonderful, isn't it?
Substance, no abuse.
25 before the hour. Well, it's not church night. Church night was last night, but we were all out watching fireworks last night, right? So here's a little item from the wonderful world of Islam. Thousands, this is what the Associated Press says, thousands of people, not 20, not hundreds, thousands of people dragged a Pakistani man accused of desecrating the Quran from a police station in central Pakistan, beat him to death, and then set his body on fire. A police official said, today, the episode highlighted the highly charged nature of Pakistan's blasphemy laws, under which anyone found guilty of insulting the Prophet Muhammad or the Quran can be sentenced to death. A senior police officer said the killing took place yesterday in a city in a deeply conservative part of central Pakistan, Bahawalpur. The police officer said the victim, who appeared to be mentally unstable to begin with, was arrested after residents said he threw pages of the Quran into the street. Well, he won't do that again, will he? Dragged from a police station by thousands of rabid Pakistanis, thousands? Wow. I mean, how many of them got a piece of his skin? Good Lord. On Tuesday, the North Carolina State General Assembly overrode Governor Bev Perdue's veto where it concerned fracking. So the Bev Perdue, Democratic governor of that state, vetoed the fracking bill. The Republicans overrode the vehicle or overrode the veto. So There's a little ironic story to this. You can believe it or not. Vince in Raleigh, North Carolina, sent this to me. This is how it was reported by the local ABC station. The fracking override passed because a House member said she accidentally pressed the wrong button to vote. Representative Becky Carney of Charlotte said she pushed the green button at her desk Monday night to vote to override the vote before realizing that she had wanted to vote red or no. Ms. Carney had voted earlier against fracking. She said she feels terrible about her error, but acknowledged the bill passed legally. Ms. Carney said, horrible, horrible. It was a huge mistake. I pushed the green button instead of the red button. I voted against this bill when it was brought before the House, and I had every intention of voting against the override tonight. Now, her yes vote made the tally 72 in favor, 47 against, just above the 60% majority required for the override. Changing her vote would have reduced the majority below 60%, you see. But the rules in the North Carolina House of Representatives prevent members from changing a vote if it affects the result. So no mistakes, no second chances. You push the green button, you voted to override, period. Now, Benson Raleigh writes, I'm a cynic by nature, so I'm not one to believe this unimaginably flimsy excuse. She voted yes, but meant to vote no. All I know is when I can light my tap water on fire, I'm moving out of the state. That's a pretty good time to move, Vince. You're absolutely right. When you turn on your tap water and hold a match to it and... God. North Carolina, the legislators up there, it's such a beautiful state. And I think Bev Perdue, while she is probably a conservative Democrat, in some I don't know. I don't know her. I shouldn't say that. I don't know her record that well. She is a Democrat in a state that swings blue, red, but it's a state that produced a piece of sniveling snot like Jesse Helms, among others. Oh, God. Jesse Helms. I wonder how he and Andy are getting along in hell. This is from Emil. You are okay, Mr. Mike Malloy. It is very refreshing to hear an intelligent voice on U.S. radio. I live in Canada, where medical care is a human right, not a luxury. I love America, but I do not like the American system of government. Please remind your listeners that a hospital is not a store, but a place to get better. That's a good way to put it. Please remind your listeners that the entire developed world has some form of humane medicine. It is time the U.S. catches up. Never. It's not going to happen. It just isn't. Not until this system is removed and a system of social democracy is put in place of it. The system as it exists in the United States is calcified. It's the way it is. It is cast in granite. There is no candidate. I don't care how sincere. There is no single candidate that can change it. I realize I'm being very anti-Gandhian now. Please forgive me. Oh my God, please forgive me. But the system has become so calcified. And at the same time, rotting. I mean, how do you do that? But it is both. And it can't be fixed. Anybody got any ideas? I know. Let's ask Republicans. I'll tell you what, tomorrow night we'll open up the lines to Republicans. Tell us how you're going to fix things.
Well, first thing you do, get rid of Obama.
Okay, what's the second thing?
What?
What's the second thing?
Go to church.
So there simply is not a solution that's come to that. This was the hardest part for me to come to terms with myself personally, just me, because, you know, I have such an investment in the future, or I thought I did. I have children and grandchildren. That is a direct investment in the future. That an emotional, a psychic investment, a spiritual investment in the future. I sometimes lay awake at night and I think, why in the hell did I have children if I am condemning them to a world where they won't even be able to breathe? But of course, you know, we didn't know, or we didn't pay any attention, right? When all the information was put out there, the information has been there. Let me give you an example, okay? This also was in the Times this morning. Searing sun and drought shrivel corn in the Midwest. The article talks about how these temperatures and lack of rain are demolishing what was expected to be the largest corn crop in the nation's history, or at least in generations. Now, maybe it's a good thing because, what, isn't all corn genetically altered now? I mean, is there anything left that is real corn? I don't know, but let's skip that part right now. According to this piece in the Times, some farmers in Illinois and Missouri have given up on parched fields, mowing them over. National experts are saying that parts of five corn-growing states, including Indiana, Kentucky, and Ohio, experienced severe extreme drought conditions. And in at least nine states, conditions in one-fifth to one-half of cornfields have been deemed poor to very poor. Blah, 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 blah. A farmer in central Indiana said, quote, you wake up every morning with that churning in your stomach. No rain. Unbelievable heat. And when I read stuff like this, the article goes on and on, and you know, it's very sad to read because you realize that this is an article about families, about farmers. This is not about factory farms, this article. And I can't help but wonder when I read this, how many folks that this is affecting have voted Republican for generations. How many of these folks made a determination at some point in the past 20 years to totally ignore the science and to pretend like, no, there's nothing going on? I wonder. I can't help but wonder that. But the chickens, as they say, are coming home to roost now. They really are. And I hate it because it's not like we, the 99%, can avoid this. We can't. Is being sponsored by Roy Runnings, whose message referencing Joe Walsh, only in America can a coward insult an American hero, not pay child support, and have a very realistic chance of getting reelected as a Republican louse in the House of Representatives. Got to love middle American Christians and their values. Shudder. It's just really, really weird and bizarre. Another email. We're catching up on emails tonight, as you could probably guess. And some odds and ends. From David in Montevideo, Minnesota. Mike, I often hear you comment that you receive a lot of emails saying you bitch a lot, but don't really provide any solutions. In my opinion, the first step in solving any problem is to identify that the problem exists. I'm a regular listener to your show primarily because you identify problems that I seldom hear discussed elsewhere. I've never understood why so many people think that problems should only be identified by those with ready-to-go solutions. Providing the solution requires a different skill set than identifying the problem in the first place. So why not just accept each person's contribution toward trying to make the world a better place? Yeah, that's a good point, Dave. I know, excuse me, a lot of people who do listen to this program do consider it to be just, a gripe fest. Well, all you do is sit around and complain. You don't have any damn solutions. I do. I mean, I have a perfect solution. But it has as much chance of succeeding as an ice cube has in hell. I've told you about Malloy's version of socialism. It's just so simple and so doable, but not here, not now. Else. Oh, yeah. Again, to North Carolina, the governor there, Beverly Perdue, the Democratic governor, had vetoed a law that limited the ability of death row prisoners to use statistical evidence of racial bias to challenge their sentences. Now, we had that issue here in Georgia 25 years ago. And at the time, the Supreme Court ruled that that sort of evidence could be introduced in requesting a new trial or having a death sentence vacated. But according to Reuters, the law, which was the act, is called the Racial Justice Act, that says people who have been sentenced to death for their crime can use statistical evidence of racial bias to challenge their sentences. I mean, it was a given. I forget the name of the or the title of the case out of Georgia. You don't have to send it to me because I'm just going to refer to it here for a moment. But and I don't have the numbers right, but the numbers showed that when the victim is black in a murder case, the victim, no matter if the perpetrator is black or white, there's less chance of the perpetrator being executed. If the victim is black and the perpetrator is black, there's also a low statistical chance that that perpetrator will get the death sentence. If the victim is white and the perpetrator is black, it's almost a given that the defendant will be sentenced to death. If the perpetrator is white and the victim is white, it's a toss-up. But the statistics were so blatant that was it Justice Powell, I think, wrote, I'm really reaching here, but I think it was Justice Powell who wrote the majority decision that said evidence of racial bias of this sort, statistical racial bias in the implementation of the death penalty was reason to challenge the conviction in an appellate hearing. So they tried to do this in a law was passed in 2009 by Governor Perdue when Democrats controlled the state General Assembly. And the law directed judges to reduce a death sentence to life in prison without parole if defendants could prove that racial bias factored into their punishment. Lawmakers who viewed the landmark law as an attempt to undermine the death penalty wrote new legislation to gut the law, only to see Perdue veto that attempt last week. But on Monday, legislators gathered the 3/5 majority needed in the House of Representatives and Senate to override Perdue's veto. So now, If someone commits a murder in North, is sentenced or is convicted of committing a murder, it is no longer an issue for the appellate court to determine whether or not there is statistical racial bias where it concerns these convictions and sentencing. So, one more example of institutional racism. It always amazes me when I hear white people talk about, well, I'm not a racist. What the hell are you talking about? Racism? Well, black people are racist, too. And I keep trying to, and not just me keep trying to, but the facts would indicate that racism is not something that can be instituted by a minority. It has to be the majority that sets up the rules, sets up I don't know. There's no point in running that down again, except to say that people who do not believe that institutional racism exists are either stupider than hell, or they just choose not to look. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.